Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, this is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
The happiest of holidays and Merry Christmas to you, Tampa Bay. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, brought to you all season long by Bill Curry Ford. The penultimate podcast of 2018 and another good news podcast. The good news, it just keeps coming several times a week. Every time we seem to talk these days, good things are happening to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Since last we spoke, 6 points were available to the Bolts, and our squad procured 5 of those 6 points. All right, good stuff. Overall, like where we're at, if you want to look at the very micromanaging today view, Friday, December 21st, there's a lackluster effort last night against Calgary, but we're going to get into a whole bunch of stuff. Look at the standings very quickly for Tampa Bay, the record through 36 games, we are 27-7-2. We are the only team in the National Hockey League to not lose 10 games in regulation. The only one. And we've only lost 7 at this point. That's pretty stellar stuff. And we're in the midst of a road trip out to Western Canada. Started out in Winnipeg, and then we work our way all the way out to the coast, Vancouver, then Calgary, and then tomorrow night against the Edmonton Oilers. On Saturday, that was the game where we didn't come away with a victory. Or excuse me, that was Sunday night at 7 p.m. It was one of the NHL's games of the year. I think we've played in a few of those. The 1-0 game against Colorado a little while back on the road was an awesome game. This 5-4 overtime finish against the red-hot Winnipeg Jets, they certainly were at the time, was another one that left people in the building saying to themselves, if this is the Stanley Cup Finals matchup, we are going to be so grateful for this best-of-7 series. And it really was. We gave up way too many scoring chances for me and my liking. I played the clip last week. I suppose I could play it again here of Steven Stamkos before the Toronto game and his thoughts on making sure we didn't hang out Andrei Vasilevsky to dry, especially since he's just coming back from injury. What say ye, Captain?
We can't have that letdown now just because he's back. Obviously, he's an elite goaltender, but we want to maintain the play that we've had. We can't just think that he's back and he's got it covered. He does most of the time, but we'll look to continue playing the right way.
Well, at that point, we were 0-2 in that department. Winnipeg had a ton of chances, and even though if you look at the stat sheet at the end, it says that for the game, Vasilevsky's save percentage was .880 or .881, whatever it is, that dude played his guts out, and he was the reason we got a point in the first place. We did produce enough offense. I mean, we had 47 shots on goal in this game to Winnipeg's 42, but even still, you would look for a tighter game defensively, but overall, this was just from a viewer's standpoint, a really entertaining 60-plus minutes of hockey. And for me, we just have to get used to, as a squad, being the team that has the bullseye on its back for all 82 games. That's the long and short of it. We have 56 points, as I said, and nobody else in the league has 50 right now. So when Tampa comes to town or you go down to Amalie to play the Bolts, you know that if you don't show up, you may get embarrassed. And so we see that. The Toronto game last week was one where we might have been a little fortunate to come away with a victory, but you saw that was an elevated level of play from both teams. They knew the score there, especially those first 10 minutes. You see great effort back and forth in that first period. Both teams understand. Toronto's got enough firepower too, and it was Vasilevsky's debut, or at least his first game back from injury, I should say, that you got to be careful here because, this isn't hockey from 1997 where 2 goals is going to get it done on a given night. You can get 2 goals scored on you in 30, 40 seconds if you're not careful. And that's what Winnipeg did again on Sunday night. The Jets brought it. That house was rocking. They couldn't wait to use Tampa Bay as that measuring stick. How good are we? And Winnipeg came away with the full 2 points. We had plenty of chances in overtime. We just didn't cash in. And Scheifele's a really good player. I'm glad we don't have to play Winnipeg in a bracket format. If we see them, it would be in the Stanley Cup Finals. That's a good team. Are they leading the world in points right now? No, but they are in control of the Central at 48 points, and they have a chance to be at the 50-point plateau through 36 games the mark the Lightning has played so far. But for Tampa, it was a good effort. In fact, I think it was a better effort than there was last night against Calgary, which was a sloppy game. But first, the game in the middle of the two. Vancouver. Okay. The Canucks tried to play the type of hockey that Edmonton played in Tampa earlier this season, and we'll preview the Oilers later on in this show. The way Anaheim tried to play, this is bully hockey. This is bullying style. We're going to physically impose our will, and you're not going to be able to answer it type of hockey. And the great thing about this 2018-2019 version of the Lightning is we do answer the bell when it comes to hit for hit, post-whistle scrums. We play together. It was in the preseason. I was talking about certain things I'd like to see different in this team that gives us a better chance to win in the playoffs when the scores are lower and the scrums are higher in number. And we needed to be tougher. This Vancouver game had brawls. It was 1995 all over again. It had post-whistle brawls. It had some questionable hits. I know that Danik Martel was not subject to a review from the league. Toronto did not call him for a fine or a suspension for his hit in the game on Tuesday night. But even still, that's kind of a blindside hit. Was it helmet to helmet, or is it shoulder to head, I should say? Excuse me, that's the NFL and college football talking. Was it shoulder to head? No, the principal point of contact was the shoulder. But the blindside hit is something that the NHL is trying to get rid of, so I think he was guilty of something there, just not as much as whiny Vancouver fans want you to believe. But then you've got a whole bunch of scrums. You've got guys going after your stars. You've got guys going after Martel. Seti P gets involved. Some of your defensemen. Chernak gets involved. Throws a huge hit before the end of the second period. This game had a little bit of all of what tests your mettle. And in certain years, in recent years really, against the teams like Boston or the West Coast teams that have been tough for some time, we didn't shrink in the moment, but we didn't exactly exert our will either. And we're doing a lot more of exerting our will. There was a good breakdown last night, a graphic that showed during the Sun Sports broadcast, the Lightning through 35 games the last two seasons. Oddly enough, we had identical records, wins, losses, and overtime losses, overtime or shootout losses. Everything was the same. But one of the principal differences was the number of hits that we have thrown. In 35 games, we threw we threw 200 more hits this year than last year. 200. That's crazy. And that tells you a little bit more about what we are as a team this year. We've got some grit to us. And I love the fact that we have some grit to us. We needed to answer that bell against Vancouver. We did. We win the game. Steven Stamkos has been on fire for the Bolts. He has 11 goals in his last 11 games. He is now number two on the all-time goal-scoring list in Tampa Bay Lightning franchise history. He passed Marty St. Louis. He's only, 15 or so goals away from Vinny LeCavalier for the all-time mark in Tampa Bay Lightning history. Kudos to Steven Stamkos. I said this a couple of weeks ago, that when he scores in bunches, and it's happening right now. Last night, he gets a little bit lucky. It's actually a centering pass or a pass to the crease to Adam Ernie. It goes off a defenseman's stick and in the net. But you know what? If you're going to score upwards of 400 goals through your first 700 games in the NHL, some are going to be lucky. But he forces his will, and he makes you pay attention to him on the ice. Not just on the power play, but certainly on even strength, 5-on-5 play right now. And if Stamkos is scoring, as I said last week, independent of a Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov line, you are in business, and he continues to do so. Which brings us to last night's game in Calgary, a game in which Stamkos does score a goal. It was part of the second period flurry that helped us tie up the game at 3-1. But why was it a 3-1 deficit to begin with? A couple of things. As a hockey club, as a professional sports franchise or team, you're never trying to lose unless it's for a lottery pick and you're just rolling a bunch of has-beens or nothing players out there in like the NBA or something like that. But I don't think you're ever trying to lose. And certainly a team in Tampa Bay's position, you're not trying to lose. But we were experimenting with some stuff last night. Had it been Game 7 of a playoff series. I don't think the lineup you saw last night is the one that we would roll out there, and certainly the way we conjured it up, the way we comprised our 18 skaters and our goaltending selection. Louis Domingue has to play, so I'm not pointing necessarily at Louis Domingue being in net and relieving Andre Vasilevsky. You got to keep him somewhat fresh, and you know, it's a four-game trip. If he plays one of the four games, okay, that's fine. But we completely shuffled our forward lines for whatever reason. I mean, you got JT Miller, Tyler Johnson, and Steven Stamkos out on a line together. You moved up Palat with Point and Kucherov. This is all in the first period, and I'm thinking to myself, really? I mean, I know Palat, Kucherov, and Point would work, but I'm not sure that Johnson, Miller, and Steven Stamkos are like that right kind of combination. I don't know where enough toughness comes from there. Just a weird collection. But the worst one was defensive pairing number three. You sit Mikhail Sergachev, who's had an up-and-down week. I thought he played a great game against Winnipeg, and I thought he played a lousy game against Vancouver. So they give him a rest because we have an embarrassment of riches on the blue line, something that pretty much no other team in hockey can say. But your third pairing is Dan Girardi and Braden Coburn together. I mean, you're just asking to lose. I don't understand how in the world you pair those two guys together if you don't have a seventh defenseman in the mix. It's just very head-scratching decisions by the coaching staff. If you want to jumble the lines and try to find some greater chemistry, maybe some more solutions, so you have, in case you're stuck down the road in March or April and nothing's working and everything's stale, you remember what you experimented with in December with your forward combinations. And, oh, we can go back to that group that we played in the Canadian road trip. I get that. But there is no way on this earth you should ever pair Dan Girardi and Braden Coburn together. Not when you have the depth we have. That makes less than zero sense. So you're down 3-1 after the first period. Louis Domingue doesn't look especially sharp. In fact, in regulation, he was wholly average at best. I think I might be kind there. In overtime in the shootout, he was God. He was Hasek reincarnated. He was Patrick Wall rolled into one. But in regulation, honestly, especially that fourth goal, that ties up the game for Calgary. Johnny Gaudreau scores it on a breakaway. It's just a bad pass in the offensive zone with under 3 minutes to go. That backhander has to be stopped. Put your stick on the ice. It's like rule number one, dude. What are you doing there? And he had been caught up to, so Gaudreau could only go to his backhand. That's a terrible goal to give up in that situation. But through the first period, you can tell I'm a little angry about that performance in regulation. Through the first period, he didn't look especially good, and we looked kind of out of it, like we didn't really want to be there. As I've gotten older, I understand a little bit more that you're not going to give it 100% for 82 straight. I can live with that a little bit, but I thought we weren't helping ourselves with the way we combined our lines and the way our defensive pairings looked, on top of the fact that you got Louis Domingue in net. Like, I would think if Louis's in net, you would want to fortify your defensive core and you would want to give yourself less variables to work with, fewer variables than more variables. And that's kind of what we did, which was the exact opposite. Anyway, we walk away with 2 points thanks to a long shootout victory. It was JT Miller who put in the winning goal for us. We scored in the first round of the shootout, and we scored in the final round of the shootout. They were about 12, 15 minutes apart, it felt like. And Louis Domingue allowed only one goal in that shootout, which is fantastic. And he made two or three five bell or five star saves, depending on how they say it in Canada, in the overtime. Calgary, sorry about you, but we walk away with 2 points there. And they have to feel pretty poor about themselves, because I thought we played sloppy hockey all night. I mean, there were a couple of things, and I'm going to hit on one that really ticked me off after we do a quick sponsor mention here in a second. Well, there was one thing that really ticked me off about our effort, but I thought in general, we just didn't look in sync, and I don't know if that's a hint that a slump's coming. I don't know if that means that we are road weary and we're ready for the holiday break. We do play just the game tomorrow night at 10 p.m. against Edmonton, followed by a protracted break until next Thursday when we host the Philadelphia Flyers, a team that has debuted a star goaltender that we'll talk about a little bit next week, I'm sure. A high-ranking prospect, number one in the league across all goaltenders in the minors. Young, I think it's Carter Hart is his name, but they just beat Nashville last night 2-1. We look like we're a little less interested in playing the game, and we might want to get home. So I'll be interested to see what the effort looks like tomorrow against Edmonton. Certainly there's a bit of bad blood there from our first matchup, which I can rehash as well. But before we do that, I would like to thank once again Bill Curry Ford, especially around the holiday season. This isn't Thanksgiving, but I'm thankful for them and their sponsorship of Hockey Talk in Tampa Bay and the Joe Bolts Fan podcast right here at joebucksfan.com. Bill Curry Ford is now giving away a 65-inch television with every vehicle purchase. Every vehicle, 65-inch TV. There you go. New general manager Sean Sullivan wants you to watch all the Bolts games and the NFL postseason in style and enjoy a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles at Bill Curry Ford. Just a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, the beautiful Bill Curry Ford showroom is always a great experience. And remember, save $12,000 on all F-150s in December. Start shopping now at BillCurryFord.com. I'm going to take a quick break here for a second. Let me catch my breath. I'm going to tell you something I don't like about last night's game against Calgary, specifically one individual's effort, and then we're going to get to the economics talk I've teased for weeks on end. Braden Point's contract, where do I think that's going to land, and how does it all make sense with the salary cap moving forward? This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network.
Taking you higher than a Dave Mishkin goal call. You're riding the lightning on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Happy holidays and a Merry Christmas to all of you out there.
Jack Frost nipping at your nose.
It's a sentimental favorite of mine. I'm sure I'm like millions and millions of other people, but I just can't imagine a world pre-1961 where this song did not exist. This is in the pantheon of greatest Christmas songs to ever be recorded. It's Nat King Cole's Christmas song. And I'm going to give you about 15 more seconds of it before I get into this podcast. So if you want to hit the skip, do it. If not, enjoy.
Help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow.
Alrighty, so from that warming feeling that the Christmas song will give you from Nat King Cole to something that pissed me off. Nikita Kucherov, damn it, man, what are you doing? Last night in overtime, overall, I think last night, Nikita was taking a bit of a break, and I don't know, maybe he has the flu, maybe something's ailing him, but he does not look right. It's nothing to be alarmed about. If we get to two or three games where he doesn't look exactly fine-tuned, then you can talk about it in a more concerned manner. I just think he's a little bit, like I talked about the rest of the team, a little bit road-weary, and he was not engaged last night. I get it. They gave him 2 points. He earned one of them. The secondary assist on the Stamkos goal was added on a little bit later. And there were a couple of shifts where he lived up to the standard, but this is, I mean, the standard truly is excellence with Nikita Kucherov. You are to demand excellence out of him. He is a $9-plus million player for us, and he just was not involved mentally in the game last night, and twice in overtime, he does not back check with any gusto whatsoever, and I want to be nuanced here to allow for perhaps a rule. Maybe the way we scheme it up in a 3-on-3, the analytics offer up that you're better off to cherry pick in a certain situation because the chances are if they don't score, you get a breakaway and you can end the game right away. But that doesn't excuse 2 instances in which Calgary is teeing off on Louis Domingue and teeing off on the players, on the 2 guys we have on the ice, because you can't get back and help out in the rush. I mean, once you see there's not going to be a clean turnover, the second instance with Kucherov was one in which I think they had a shot followed by 2 or 3 rebounds, and we couldn't mark all the guys. I mean, it's just a joke. Nikita's been a great player for us all year long, and this doesn't undo all of that. And don't get me wrong here. I'm not trying to be Mr. Soapbox guy. But, I mean, come on, dude. You could also demand a little bit more out of 86 in that moment. And the second time was when Yanni Gord's on the ice. He's been up and down, sprinting at full speed, getting involved in the rush, and then getting back on defense, going back up the ice. And here he comes again. He's ready to vomit on the ice, and you can see it. One of the replays shows Nikita going for a jog. He's going for a skate. come on, man. I know. It's not the end of the world, but just last night that irked me a bit. If you're going to be out of the game mentally, or you're just not going to have that magic on a given night, you can give me some effort, especially in freaking overtime. It's your last shift, dude. Come on. Be better than that. All right. So to the economics that I've long teased now, once the deal was struck for Toronto, William Nylander was given a 6-year, $6.9 million per contract extension with the Maple Leafs. They thought that was not going to go towards the end there. They thought he was going to sit out, and who knows next what would be next for Toronto. But once that deal was signed, Brayden Point has a bit of a precursor. He has a bit of precedent to work with as to what he's going to be paid moving forward. And the dynamics of this are interesting for Tampa Bay because obviously we have a lot of young talent that we want to lock up moving forward, not the least of which is Andrei Vasilevskiy, who has one more year on an extremely reasonable deal. $3.5 million is what one of the best goalies in the world is making right now. He will make that again next year, but then after that, he has restricted free agency, a time in which he is going to be making somewhere between $6.5 to $10 million, depending upon how stingy he wants to be. And he has every right to be if he continues playing this well through next season, not just this year. So you've got some big-time dynamics at play of how do you keep all of your guys, or at least as many as you can, and still have the wiggle room to make a move here or there if one of them isn't what the contract says he is going to be. So let's go back to Brayden Point's current salary figure. He makes, this is absurd, he makes $686K right now. That's about 10 times lighter than he has earned at this point. If William Nylander is worth $6.9 million, well, then Brayden Point is worth more than that. But here are a couple of things to consider. Right now, the salary cap is at $79,500,000. Next year, according to the NHL owners' meetings, the most recent ones that happened out in Georgia, the number is going to be somewhere around $83 million. So any raise in the salary cap, which is not a guaranteed thing, but any raise in the salary cap is good news for the Bolts. And to do so at a clip of around, what would that be, 3.5-4%? That's really good news. You need every dollar that you can find. So $83 million is going to be what's available to us next year, but we are at $73 million currently, and that's with a zero next to Brayden Point's name. Well, what does he have to think about? First off, the state of Florida, there is no state tax. It doesn't mean that the entirety of your contract is something that is weighted down. Because of state tax, it depends on. There's a long story that goes into this, where depending upon where you play a given NHL game is how you collect your money and how you're taxed on your money for that particular game check. But if you play 41 of those things plus the games in Sunrise, Florida, then the bulk of your money is going to be made in a place where there is no state tax. Games in Texas, you're playing the Dallas Stars, all right, you're in business. No state tax there. When the Seattle franchise joins the NHL, the state of Washington has no state tax. But it really is a benefit to teams in Tampa and Texas and soon to be Seattle that nobody else enjoys, which makes the cap dollars for your franchise worth all the more. In economic terms, put it simply, you can pay Brayden Point less gross money, less dollars in terms of raw gross contract money than you would have to in New York or California for him to walk away with the same net amount of money after taxes. So maybe that means that you can operate with a contract somewhere between 6.5 and 7.25 for Brayden Point. But he is going to blow Nylander's numbers out of the water, which means that if his agent is worth his weight in gold and Brayden Point doesn't want to take a supreme hometown discount the way that Victor Hedman has, the way that Steven Stamkos has, then and Nikita Kucherov did for his bridge deal, then he's going to command at least $7 million. So where does that put you? That puts you at $80 million. You got $3 million left to sign 3 more forwards and 4 more defensemen. I don't have an economics degree, undergraduate, postgraduate from Harvard Business or MIT, but I know enough to know that somebody's got to say bye-bye. You got to let somebody go next year. And the obvious candidate would be Ryan Callahan. And that stinks because Ryan's played some great hockey, especially since he got well towards the end of last season. He's come up with a little bit of an injury bug on this road trip, but he's largely been healthy since he returned for the playoffs, or at least active, and playing really solid hockey for us. But he comes at the price of $5.8 million per season. That's way too much for the effort, for the production that he's going to provide you. And he's in the final year of his deal. So what you're hoping for is that you can send a Ryan Callahan off to a team that's full of youngsters, that is looking for a veteran stabilizing presence in their locker room. Somebody who's got a lot of cap space that's willing to take it on, so that you can send at least $4.5-5 million of that down the line to another squad. If you do that, now you're talking about $8 million to make some moves with younger forwards, and also to bring some more defensemen in. You can sign most of your forwards through restricted free agency. Adam Ernie is due a deal. Seti Paquette would be due another RFA deal. Danik Martell is potentially there. And then you have, obviously, Corey Conacher that we signed in the preseason, and he'll come at a cheap cost. They signed him to a two-year, two-way deal because they knew that a salary cap crunch was coming up in 2019-2020. So out of the four or five spots that you're looking for another forward, you already can pencil one in that Corey Conacher is going to take that job. On defense, the picture isn't nearly as pretty. You've got three UFAs. You've got three RFAs. Anton Stralman, Braden Coburn, Dan Girardi, all coming off the books. You might be able to re-sign Girardi at a cheaper number than $3 million. He's certainly not worth that right now. He's worth about half that. He's not playing that great. Braden Coburn's having a really good year, putting a lot of good film out there that he can skate up and down the ice like he used to. He is at 3.7 right now. I don't know that you can get him for cheaper on the open market. Maybe he wants to stay in Tampa, but I don't know that you can get him for just 3.7 the way he's skated this year. I think that'll be an attractive commodity to other squads around the league. And open market, what does it do? It always raises the prices. Anton Stralman is currently paid $4.5 million, and I find that to be the most fascinating deal that's upcoming. If we strike it with Anton, what's he worth? Indeed, he will be playing for a lot of money between now and the playoffs run. He just got healthy, and he's going to be one of your top six guys. You're not bumping him out of the lineup anymore. He's good enough to still be one of your top six, but where in the order does he fall? And that will determine whether or not we re-sign him, and that will determine whether or not we can afford him. Should be interesting there. But Braden Point's going to command somewhere in the neighborhood of, I would think, $7.5 million a season. And that'll get you by for another year, but then you have a bit of a crisis coming up if the cap doesn't go up another 3.5-4 to the mid to upper 80s in a couple of seasons, because you've got so much tied up and so few players. We've done a great job as an organization of avoiding the issues that a team like Chicago has right now, where they have no money and they're not any good, and they just kind of have to eat it because they won three cups and they overpaid for them. But you won three cups. You can never take that away. We've done a good job of extending our window. We've done a good job of developing talent so we can send some players off and save some dollars. But a crisis is coming around that 2021 year for the league. And who knows? Maybe we'll get bailed out by the economics of a lockout or a renewal of a collective bargaining agreement. But then you also have to consider the fact that the expansion draft is coming too for Seattle. So maybe they could take a contract off our books if we sweeten the pot with a draft pick. That was about as in the weeds as a Joe Bolts fan will ever get with economics. I do apologize if I lost you there and you just fast forward and said, the hell with this crap. I'll come back when he's talking about the games on the ice. I get it. I get it. The talk is not for everybody, but I find it really interesting, and I'm a bit of a hockey nerd more than I am just a jock sports fan. And I can't wait to see how we manage this contract negotiation for more than just the obvious reason of fitting underneath the cap. Steve Yzerman had a way of having players sign for fewer dollars than they were worth, and it wasn't just about estate tax. Does Julien Brisebois have that kind of pull? Was it even Steve Yzerman? Was it Jeff Vinnick? We're going to find out. The Braden Point contract and the Andre Vasilevsky contract are going to tell us an awful lot about the negotiation power in Tampa Bay. Does it leave with Steve Yzerman when his consulting contract is up, or does it stick around? All kind of fascinating stuff. Now for tomorrow night, we play the Edmonton Oilers. That's a 10 p.m., shortly after 10 p.m. puck drop. That's our last game before the holiday break. I find this one really interesting because of any potential bad blood that we might have stemming back to the first matchup that we saw this season in Tampa Bay. You had Leon Draisaitl chicken wing Braden Point in the head for no reason, near the blue line, near the bench. I don't know what he was thinking, but he took a run at Braden Point's head. Should have been a concussion if he delivered the way he wanted to. You had Matthew Joseph was in the middle of two or three scrums. You had Cassian make a crazy run at Matthew Joseph along the boards when his body was pinned. It reminded me of a hit that James Harrison put on Josh Cribbs years ago, the concept of somebody's tied up, so you're going to take a free run at him. That's what Cassian did to Joseph. Joseph got in a hit. I don't think the intent was there to be dirty, but he got in a hit that was dangerous and painful. Delivered one to Edmonton, and then Milan Lucic drops the gloves and jumps Matthew Joseph when he's not looking, and Milan Lucic is older, stronger, and he bullied him. So, do we make a run at any of the following three, Cassian, Lucic, or Draisaitl tomorrow night? It should be interesting. I think there's going to be more scuffling. I think this game, while it won't be as equipment-laden on the ice as Vancouver, I think this game will have a little nasty edge to it, which is awesome, because if you're going to be without Tampa Bay Lightning hockey for about 5 days, you might as well have that last game you watch be truly entertaining. So if the kids aren't able to watch it, DVR that sucker, watch it on Sunday, watch it over the holiday break. I think it's going to be a good one. But as for now, times are good in Tampa Bay. We are, again, far and away the number one team in the league. It's an easy podcast to do when we are. Mostly good news we're talking about. And the number, again, that I find really interesting as we've collected points in 11 straight, we are 10-0-1 in the last 11 games. 11 games, 11 goals for Steven Stamkos as well. We don't have 10 regulation losses yet. Everybody in the league has at least 10, and we don't even have 8. We got 7. That is highbrow stuff from Tampa. And let's see if it continues between now and the next time we talk, which will be next Friday, December the 28th. We'll react to Edmonton and Philly, and then we'll look to the second half of the schedule as the Lightning get towards winning time. You don't want to be December champions necessarily, best team in hockey in December if you can't follow through in the playoffs, but you got to like where we're at right now. I really am excited to see what this team does moving forward after the holiday season and into the new year. We'll talk about a lot of it next week on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, presented all season long by our friends at Bill Curry Ford. Again, for the holiday season, come on, man, a 65-inch TV with every car. What the heck are you doing if you're not at least visiting BillCurryFord.com? Thanks for listening this week, and we will talk to you again next Friday.